You may not know this about me, but I was a competitive eater. Not publicly, just in my head. Mostly competing with myself to see how many hot dogs and hamburgers I could eat, how many slices of pizza. The interesting thing about being a competitive eater is even when you finish your competitive time, you're still eating. So you don't have to get off the bike like a competitive cyclist because your knees are worn out. You can still eat. But what I've been working on in the past 4 to 6 months is a sort of mindful approach to eating, pausing between bites more carefully, noticing different flavors and the way it interacts in my mouth, looking at the food instead of just shoveling, which so many of us do. Did you know that cannolis have cinnamon in them? I had never tasted it before, and I love cannolis. I just respected the whole gestalt of the thing. This is the parsha, one of the two places in Torah where we learn the rules of kashrut, connecting food to the spiritual, connecting what we consume, what goes into our mouth, in a similar way to what comes out of our mouth with the Almighty and with God's demands of us. The Baal Shem Tov, the leader of the Hasidic revival movement some centuries ago, noted that God gives physical form to spiritual aspects in a sort of Platonic ideal. But the Jew makes spiritual the physical. We take what is physical, the things we consume, the ways we dress, what we speak, shoes we wear, even the shoelaces, and imbue them with spiritual moment. And these questions of our appetites are very pertinent, not just to me, who struggled always with eating. As I was asked in an early interview for rabbinical school what the hardest mitzvah was for me, I said kashrut because I'm a chazer, a pig. So this framework of recognizing and addressing our appetites, sometimes sexual, sometimes acquisitive, sometimes aggressive, all the things in large measure that make up the yetzer hara, and not just acknowledging, but eventually mastering them or striving toward mastery with our yetzer tov, is significant in this week's parsha as well. As God expands the land, we're told in chapter 20, and we wish to eat meat outside of sacred precincts according to avat nafshecha, the appetites of our spirit. A recognition that there is a desire to do whatever we darn well please, to consume as we wish, to be reckless in our motivations and in our actions. And as we well know, even Orthodox Jews can be morbidly obese. There's nothing about kashrut that prevents you from eating too much or poorly or eating junk food. And so the goal in a lot of Judaism is to temper or perhaps eventually master our appetites. And to quote Torat Kohanim, one of the Midrashim, mostly about Leviticus, and which is later expanded by Maimonides, you don't say, I don't like pig's meat, I don't like bacon, I don't like chorizo or ham. You should say, I am perfectly capable of enjoying ham, bacon. The only reason I don't eat it is in order to comply with God's will for me. The old joke about the priest and the rabbi and how delicious bacon is. I'll tell the full joke another time. But it is. You know, my kids have become very curious living in a kosher household what bacon tastes like, what shrimp tastes like. And I told them after their bar mitzvah, they can try with their own money. You know, they can try not in my house and not with my money, but they can try to kind of satisfy and sate that extreme curiosity that develops about such things. But this sort of principle of being the word used in our, I think the fifth aliyah was bliyael, without yoke, without restriction, without definition, is very anathema to Deuteronomy, to Torah, and to Judaism. It's the worst kind of morality, what philosophers would call autonomous morality. Every man, do what you will is the whole of the law, which I think was an anarchist or libertarian principle. Deuteronomy in chapter 12 describes it as Lo tasun kechol asher anachnu osim po hayom, ish kol asher beinav. Don't do what everyone does now. This is to say, in the wilderness or pre-wilderness period, everyone doing whatever is right or correct or direct in his eyes. Americans focus on rights. Jews focus on responsibilities. Americans focus And to an extent, the Western liberal tradition focuses on the atomistic individual. Jews don't see us that way. Judaism understands us to be part of a community that has debt, not only to the Almighty, but to each other. So to think about neoclassical economics and its avoidance of price floors and price ceilings and the dangers therein, the Talmud speaks of them all the time. And its statement is that God chooses, not us, that ultimate choice residing in the individual is a caustic and toxic thing. Hamakom asher yivchar Adonai, which the place that God will choose for you, which is frequently speaking of the place of the temple, but it's repeated again and again in this week's parasha to indicate that God selects for us. It's a very dangerous outcome, I suppose, to leading to a sort of theocracy or zealotry. But at a smaller and more discreet level, it follows some of the works of the Quakers and 12-step meetings of understanding that our own will for us is often very self-destructive, toxic, and can lead us astray with our own desires and interests, self-interests, and self-aggrandizement. Chizkuni, a medieval philosopher, I couldn't find the original Hebrew, but the translation is great. He describes the pre-temple period, the pre-tabernacle period of everyone offering sacrifices in their backyard. I don't know what that translation was, because I doubt even Chizkuni had a backyard. And I know our ancestors didn't. They lived in tight quarters with strictly defined neighborhoods. But I love the image of people sort of just having barbecue in their backyard. And that was the problem that God needed to correct. But the simple fact is, growing up, I don't think this exists in Tennessee. We had rules about when you could start a fire in your backyard. Having a bonfire, you had to register with the local ordinances. I don't get the impression that that's true here, or at least not from my neighbor who has bonfires about every other week. But the understanding growing up and in Judaism was that our actions affect others, and that we are Kol Yisrael Aravim Ze Laze, but God, all of us are responsible for each other. We're all intermixed in society, in a world in which globalization is stronger and stronger, in which climate change, what I burn, what I consume, affects not just me, not just my family, but every other human being on earth, especially those in low-lying coastal areas, but even in rural parts of Canada that experience drastic heat waves. So among the beautiful mitzvot of Deuteronomy in this parasha, Re'eh, we're told to attend to the poor. There should be ephes ki lo yeyevecha evyon. There ought not to be any impoverished among you, such that God will bless you in your land that God is giving you to inherit. It's a high bar. I think Torah understands the importance of setting a visionary bar and recognizing the limits of human frailty. But the understanding is that caring for the vulnerable, whether it's the poor, the widow, the orphan, the stranger, is to our good. It's to our moral expansion and to expand our moral imagination. Says one of our sages, the poor are for the good of the wealthy. It's a longer parable about that that you can agree or disagree with, but it's potentially true. A lot of the volunteering we do for nonprofits is more for the volunteer than the served. That's a problem in nonprofit work, but admittedly, it expands our moral muscles. Rashi in the 12th century says that the poor of your city take precedence over the poor of a different city. Which I'll stretch a bit to say, I think he's teaching civic mindedness. And I think Judaism, whether in Shtetl or in Knoxville, is civic minded, is about social service, is about bringing justice to those who aren't us, and to including and weaving others into the fabric of our needs and our requirements and our responsibilities and our satisfactions and supports. So this brings me to a thing that's been upsetting me for quite a while. People's inability to and resistance to masks and vaccinations. And somehow, neither president of the COVID period has clearly and unequivocally stated that the reason you wear masks, less so with vaccinations, is not for you. It's for every other human being around you. And just as we made dramatic communal sacrifices during World War II with metal rationing, just as we understood the need for seatbelts and motorcycle helmets, just as we've gone through the transition in my life against litter and against smoking indoors, we've recognized that our actions, sometimes trivial, sometimes large, have effects on others, and that we are part of a network, a mutuality of humanity, and that your vaccination isn't just your choice, but affects my children. And sometimes I'm just enraged about this. That if we've already reached the stage where we recognize, I think 90% of us, that you can inhale a cigarette in a restaurant, but you can't exhale it. Your breath with COVID germs is no different. And that's not only a matter of healthcare literacy, that's a matter of moral imagination and understanding of the mutuality of human society. Further in the parsha, as it describes the ways in which we treat the poor, it says, Naton titen lo, give, surely give to him, to the poor. And it will not be bad in your heart, velo yera levavacha. It will soothe you, it will not be agitating to you. Ki biglal hadavar hazeh, God will bless you. Biglal, which is a very modern term. I didn't actually notice that it's biblical. I always think of that as a very modern term for since or because. And part of the reason I didn't recognize it, it's either only used once or extremely rarely used in Torah and Bible. But it's used here in an unusual way, and it has the common etymology with the wheel, with the circle, with things that rotate and revolve. Ibn Ezra, one of my favorite medieval scholars, said the reason that this word is used is that all of our individual bodies are nothing more than parts of an integrated whole. And among the many wonderful lessons, ethical maxims, and teachings of Judaism, of course, is paradox, but also this sense that rights are nice, but they're not the only thing. Responsibility, covenant, drive to serve, lessening of oneself, the kind of humility that not only thinks less of oneself, but thinks about oneself less, is an antidote to the natural and evolutionary narcissism we may feel, and certainly that has come to the forefront in the last years and decades of American life. It's intense, honestly, as the economist said, narcissism of our society, looking out only for oneself. Not everything is personal freedom. Even true libertarians, even Milton Friedman, I think, would have recognized that. Contrary to what Mitt Romney said in 2012, you didn't build everything. You benefited from lighthouses and roads and police forces. Right? If you are an entrepreneur, whatever your success, there is public goods and public costs. Every economist does recognize that. So in this period of frustration, as I think people are starting to uptake more vaccinations when they see the dangers of Delta, when they see the continuing prevalence of hospitalizations and ICU care, they're recognizing that it's not a facade. It's not a myth that we're all vulnerable and we all have to take care of each other. And vaccination, just like mask wearing, isn't a personal choice. It's a matter of societal covenant. So in the very opening lines of this week's parasha, it says, Anochi noten lifnechem ayom bracha uklala. See, I give to you today bracha, which we translate as blessing, I think quite fairly, uklala, often translate as curse, this choice of what to follow, our own willful hearts or God's desires for us. And Yonatan ben Uziel, accorded to be one of the great students of Rabbi Akiva, who wrote an Aramaic translation of Torah, and I have no idea where this English translation came from, because I think that's what's really interesting, is translated as saying, see, today I give you the blessing and the transmutation, which I think if you read Calvin and Hobbes was, I think, a tool he had as a transmuter or transmogrifier. And I think that's the work societally, is to transmute almost alchemically a society of narcissists, Tocquevillian atomists, followers of Western liberal rights, to challenge them with Jewish and other conceptions of responsibilities and societal debt and integration. And the truth is, for me personally, I don't think either side should win. I think the goal Jewishly is to live in the paradox between rights and responsibilities, to recognize that free and individual choice, free markets produce a lot of goods, as Adam Smith pointed out to us, but they produce what economists call a lot of negative externalities. They produce some problems too. And so we are not free and liberated human beings in every sense of the word. And the challenge for each of us and for policymakers within the Overton window, within the limits of rational discourse, is to, Josh is holding up his tzitzits, a reminder of that covenant. The challenge in policymaking and rational discourse is to recognize the limits of rights and the limits of responsibilities and the overlap between the two.